Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events. And today we are going to be breaking down the Combating Violence, Disorder, and Looting and Law Enforcement Protection Act that just came down the pipe here in Florida. We're going to give our reactions. We're going to talk about the arguments on both sides. There are lots of people going crazy on social media saying it's unconstitutional. Then you have people from the other side saying it's about time. We needed something like this months ago. So we're going to give you our perspective on it. We're going to break it down and we're going to go through it because that's what we do on this podcast. So if you guys have anything you want us to break down or you want our opinion on, you can find us on social media at Tragos Law across all platforms, or you can send me an email, petertragos@greeklaw.com, and we'd be happy to break it down for you. All right, on today's episode, I've got my partner Pete Sardis here with me to break down the Combating Violence, Disorder, and Looting and Law Enforcement Protection Act. A lot of people are going to over-politicize this. I think there is a political element to it. Obviously, we have a Republican governor. People are calling him a puppet of our Republican president, and they're going to be saying they're pushing the right side agenda, and I think parts of this act may be more politicized than other, and we'll give you our opinions on that. But for the most part, my opinion and initial overarching theme of this act, especially when it deals with the criminal aspects of it, is not much has changed. Most of this is already criminal activity in Florida. We're going to go through it piece by piece, but I mean, destroying property, fighting people, punching people, breaking things, hurting people always has been a crime in Florida. None of this changed. Some of the penalties have been enhanced, but I mean, this shouldn't be as shocking as it sounds to so many people on Facebook. And whether or not it violates the Constitution, we'll go through some of their arguments and what they say violates the Constitution, but I'm not seeing it personally. Did we need this? I don't know. The politics and the fights and the divisiveness in the nation are creating issues and creating fights on both sides that I don't think need to happen. I mean, this stuff just seems to be, everybody's trying to throw a match and more gasoline on this fire, and I don't necessarily know if we needed it. But Pete, when we start talking about this, one of the things that sticks out to me is the first section is called New Criminal Offenses to Combat Rioting, Looting, and Violence, right? It says the words new in there. I have no idea why the governor decided to put the words new in there. But as we go through, there's not much new, is there?
There's really not much of anything that's new.
And the first section under Section 1, which is Paragraph A, says prohibition on violent or disorderly assemblies. Third-degree felony when seven or more persons are involved in an assembly and cause damage to property or injury to other persons. So let me get this straight. If you injure somebody or destroy property as a group, that's a crime. It doesn't sound like that's new, does it?
It isn't at all. And I'll tell you, just to be specific, there is a Florida statute, 870.01, and it's called affrays and riots. And what an affray is, by definition, is a scuffle. And I think we can all get an idea about what a riot is. And it basically says anyone that is guilty of a riot, inciting a riot, or encouraging a riot is guilty of a third-degree felony. That's been that way. Even less, let's take it back a step. Any person guilty of an affray, meaning a scuffle, is guilty of a first-degree misdemeanor. It's already in the statute.
Right. And again, it's important to point out that they're talking about violence, and they're talking about causing injuries to other people or damages. They're not talking about peaceable assembly. They're not talking about your right to protest. They're not talking about those things in this act, and in the criminal statute, they're not either. And as we go across and read Section B of this, which is prohibition on obstructing roadways, and we're going to go through, and you're going to hear a lot of times before I read that section, it talks about disorderly assemblies and violent assemblies. And I want to just say, in Florida, most people know disorderly conduct is a crime, all right? It's a misdemeanor for the most part. Disorderly conduct is simply defined as corrupting the public morals or outrage the sense of public decency or affect the peace and quiet of persons who may observe the act. Most people think of it as somebody getting too drunk at a bar and causing a scene, causing a fight, whatever. Disorderly conduct is already illegal. So disorderly assemblies are also illegal by that same definition. So none of this stuff is new, and you'll see they put those words in there every time. It has to be a violent or disorderly assembly. It can't just be a normal, peaceful assembly. And again, to interrupt myself, Section B, prohibition on obstructing roadways. It's a third-degree felony to obstruct traffic during a unpermitted protest, demonstration, or violent or disorderly assembly, and the driver is not liable for injury or death caused if fleeing for safety from a mob. So first, let's take that first section, Pete. It's a third-degree felony now to obstruct traffic during unpermitted protests, and the reason for that is you can get a permit to block off a whole street and do your protest. They're not talking about those, obviously, if the local government permits it, but it's an unpermitted one if you're just blocking the street, smashing stuff, trying to stop cars like we've all seen the videos on social media for.
Right, but if you look at Florida Statute 316.2045, which is titled obstruction of traffic,
it was already a crime.
It's already a crime, and it specifically says it is unlawful for any person or persons to willfully obstruct the free, convenient, and normal use of any public street, highway, or road by impeding, hindering, stifling, retarding, or restraining traffic or passage thereon. It's already a second-degree misdemeanor.
So again, it's going to enhance the penalties a little bit. And just for people that don't know, we've actually gone, we've done a full podcast on the level of crimes, but first degree is the most serious. So a first degree felony is the most serious felony. A first degree misdemeanor is the most serious misdemeanor. So a third degree felony, which you've already heard twice in this act, is the lowest level of felony you can have. In this case, it was already a second degree misdemeanor, which is the least severe misdemeanor you can have. Obviously, first degree would be the most severe, second degree least severe. Below that is just a civil infraction. So it's bumping it up from the least severe misdemeanor to the least severe felony. And now let's take that second part, which to me is way more interesting because this is weird and does sound like a change, that the driver is not liable for injury or death caused if fleeing for safety from a mob, meaning if somebody's blocking the roadway and starts smashing your windows in your car and you hit the gas to get out of there and you run over a bunch of people and kill them, you're not liable for any of those injuries or those deaths according to this act. That's pretty crazy, and that is a change, because if you're fleeing for safety now and you hit somebody, we can still sue you for that victim that you injured if they weren't doing anything wrong and you happen to hit them, because our argument would be you could have found a safer way to flee. You could have gone around them. You didn't have to actually hit them.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what's interesting about this particular part of the statute, and this is, I think, a trend, because it mirrors the language of another law that's frankly been a little, actually, a lot hotly contested. It was Stand Your Ground. The way the Stand Your Ground law reads is that you have the right to stand your ground. If someone is attacking you or there's the risk of death, you can retaliate with necessary force, and you cannot be prosecuted, or there's also a civil remedy. You cannot be sued for that action. So this is the exact opposite of Stand Your Ground. It's leave your ground, I guess.
So to me, the big parts of this are going to be defining a mob and defining fleeing for safety. Like, did you have to flee? Did you have to hit people? Because if you didn't, then you can still sue for it. And it's the same thing, and it's same analysis in the case I just described. If someone's fleeing for their safety and hits our client, they're not automatically liable. We would have to prove they did something negligently. And my guess is it would be the same here. But this act, this becomes law, then basically it's going to make it a lot harder for you to prove that case.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing. The courts have been very good throughout history of pretty much defining conduct. So what you let me just go out there, unless anybody doesn't already know this, you should not run people over in the street, because right, someone's going to consider the reasonableness of your actions at some point to determine whether or not you're immune.
Right, which is obviously a different thing. You have your kids in the car or pets in the car and somebody smashing your window with hammers and throwing things inside your car, then you get out of there to protect yourself. But if they're just blocking the street and you run them over, this ain't going to protect you, I hope. All right, next section is paragraph C, prohibition on destroying or toppling monuments. It's a second degree felony to destroy public property during a violent or disorderly assembly. And again, you're going to hear those words violent or disorderly assembly a lot in these sections. But Pete, is destroying public property already a crime?
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at section 806.13 of the Florida statute, it defines criminal mischief as willful and malicious maliciously causing injury or damage by any means to any real or personal property belonging to another person.
And what does that include? What kind of defacement or damage?
It actually, by definition, talks about graffiti, vandalism, sabotage, defacement, breakage, and other destructive acts.
So all of those things are already a crime.
Right.
People need to understand this trend that these things are already a crime. The outrage is fine if you think DeSantis is politicizing it. And we're going to get to the last section, which I think is overly political on his part. But this criminal aspects of it, these things are already a crime. And the states that are allowing these things to go on with no repercussion and no prosecution, they're the ones that are going on the opposite side of the law, not the states that are actually saying if crimes are occurring, then we're going to prosecute those crimes. There are going to be plenty of lawyers that are going to get outraged by that. But in my opinion, that's the world that we live in, and we do criminal defense. So we understand exactly how this works. And the point is, if somebody is committing a crime, then arrest them and prosecute them. If they are not, then don't. That's always going to be our stance. He's not creating new crimes, even though it's exactly what it says, new criminal offenses. He is enhancing a lot of the penalties. So when you're talking about destroying property, so he's making this a second-degree felony. How does it work with the severity of crimes when you talk about criminal mischief and destroying property and the crimes as they already stand in Florida?
Okay, here's how it works in Florida. The degree of crime is going to be based on the value or the amount of money of damage caused. For example, if you commit property damage of $200 or less, that is a second-degree misdemeanor. From $200 to $1,000 or less, it is a first-degree misdemeanor. If the damage to the property exceeds $1,000, now you're in felony territory, and that becomes a third-degree felony as the law sits today.
Right, and when you talk about $1,000, that's not just destroying something that's worth $1,000. That $1,000 includes fixing, cleaning, moving, delivering, buying the new thing to fix whatever has been broken. So it's not just the value of the item, but it's also all the work it takes to create or fix or clean and put the item back how it was, if it's a storefront or if it's a statue or whatever it may be. The next section under new crimes is paragraph D, which is prohibition on harassment in public accommodations. It's a first degree misdemeanor for a participant in a violent or disorderly assembly. Those words again. To harass or intimidate a person at a public accommodation such as a restaurant. This is aimed at people going in, smashing dishes, flipping over tables as part of their quote-unquote protest, hurting people, damaging property, whatever it may be. This is now a first-degree misdemeanor. Pete, are these actions already a crime in Florida?
Completely, and they've been so for years. Section 784.011 is the Florida statute on assault, which basically makes it a crime to intentionally threat to commit violence towards another person. That's a second-degree misdemeanor. But I'll take it one step further. The definition of harassing, which means to engage in a course of conduct directed at a specific person that causes substantial emotional distress in such person and serves no legitimate purpose, is codified in Florida Statute 784.048, which is the stalking statute, and that conduct I just talked about, if you willfully and maliciously do that, it's a misdemeanor of the first degree, and there's a number of sub-paragraphs, and the crimes can go all the way from first-degree misdemeanor all the way to third-degree felony if, for example, a child's involved or some other
enhancement. Right. So this would be a first-degree misdemeanor, and it's specifically talking about violent or disorderly assembly and doing it to harass or intimidate somebody, and that would fall right under harassing, stalking, cyber-stalking, assault, because you're intimidating them. I mean, those things are already crimes. Now, definitions will be important whenever these come down as to what intimidation, the definition of that actually is. But these actions are really, somebody's a waiter at Chili's and you go in there and flip over their tables and scream in their faces and threaten to burn them alive for no reason. I mean, that stuff's already a crime. And anybody that doesn't want that to be a crime, you've got a problem, because you shouldn't be treating waiters at restaurants like this. It doesn't do anything to help any cause to treat these people that work at what they call public accommodations. It doesn't help to treat these people in any certain way just for being at their job. Paragraph E under this new criminal offenses section is RICO liability. This is the last paragraph here. And it says RICO liability attaches to anyone who organizes or funds a violent or disorderly assembly. Again, violent or disorderly assembly. Pete, talk a little bit about briefly. We could do a whole podcast on RICO, but briefly explain what RICO is and if this would already be considered a crime.
All right. RICO stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations. And the RICO Act is something that the feds put into play in order to fight organized crime back in the 1920s. And then every state pretty much has a mirrored RICO Act. So if anybody influences or tries to further a corrupt scheme to defraud or scheme to, you know, to do something bad, something illegal, it falls under RICO. Now, they don't use RICO often. RICO is something that is reserved for an actual organized scheme. But right off the bat, when we, based on your definition, if we look at the definition of riot again, 775.083, inciting or encouraging a riot is a third degree felony in the state of Florida anyway. So if you promote it, it
could easily fall under there.
Absolutely.
If this act, nothing happens with this act coming down the pipe, they still could be prosecuted for that.
Right.
It was already a crime. All right. The second section is increased penalties. And there are two paragraphs under this section. A is mandatory minimum jail sentences. Striking a law enforcement officer, including with a projectile, meaning throwing something at them, during a violent or disorderly assembly equals 6 months mandatory minimum jail sentence. So, Pete, for anybody out there that doesn't know, if I punch you in the face, it's much less severe of a penalty than if I punch a cop in the face. There are already enhanced penalties for what we call a bat Leo. That's battery on a law enforcement officer, L-E-O. We say bat Leo. There's already enhanced penalties for that. So talk a little, that's not a surprise, but it's not a 6 month mandatory minimum jail sentence. So talk a little bit about what this does to the enhancements, what the normal enhancements are for bat Leo, and talk about some other minimum mandatory prison sentences that are also attached to this already in Florida.
All right. So first of all, we talk about bat Leo because we normally talk about law enforcement officers, but it does also cover emergency medical personnel, firefighters, EMS folks, all of those people are covered. And the basic gist is this. Whatever the penalty would be for whatever the crime is against a normal civilian, the law adds a level to it when there's a law enforcement officer.
It bumps
officer.
It up one from second right. degree to first degree, or from first degree misdemeanor to third degree felony, or third degree felony to right. second. Whatever. That's
so
one level.
An assault on a regular person is a second degree misdemeanor. An assault on a law enforcement officer is a first degree misdemeanor, as the law sits today. If it's a battery, if you actually strike a law enforcement officer, it goes from a misdemeanor of the first degree for a civilian to a felony of the third degree. Now, here's where it gets interesting. If you are involved in an aggravated assault, I'll give the best example I can is basically you use your car to drive towards a police officer, but you don't actually hit them. That goes from a third degree felony, which would be if it was just you or me, to a second degree felony. And then things start happening, like minimum mandatory prison sentences, which already exist. By the way, aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer is a 3-year minimum mandatory prison term. Aggravated battery goes from second degree felony to first degree felony on a law enforcement officer. Now you're looking at 5 years of minimum mandatory prison. You put a firearm in there. In any of these events, you add yourself another 3-year minimum mandatory. If it's a semi-automatic or high-capacity firearm, the minimum mandatory has jumped to 8 years. So all this is already there.
Right, and there's already minimum mandatory sentences. Now, this does add a lower level of that, making it 6 months if you just strike them or push. I think what they're trying to do is keep people right. from pushing or punching or hitting or taking something off of their vest or whatever. I think that's kind of what they're trying to get at here with this 6 month, which is an enhancement, I'll say. So talk a little bit about the throwing a projectile at people. I mean, again, already a crime, right?
Yeah, you really can't throw bricks, bottles, Molotov cocktails, anything that can cause injury because in Florida, 790.19 says shooting or throwing a, and it's called a deadly missile, meaning anything that can cause great bodily injury or death is illegal. And frankly, this statute is really long and it talks about buildings and boats and cars and all that stuff. And to make a long story short, it is a felony, secondary felony in Florida to do that today.
And just to be clear, a bat Leo during an assembly is also already a crime in Florida.
Absolutely. It is. 784.07.
All right. So let's move on to paragraph B under increased penalties, and that's offense enhancements. An offense or a sentence enhancement for, number one, throwing an object during a violent or disorderly assembly that strikes a civilian or law enforcement officer. We've been through that already. Number two, assault or battery of a law enforcement officer during a violent or disorderly assembly. Again, already a crime. And number three, which is what we're going to focus on for a second, participation in a violent or disorderly assembly by an individual from another state. So they're enhancing the penalties if you're from another state. And I've seen a lot of people that are smart lawyers arguing online that this violates equal protection. You're not treating people the same based on where they're from. I just don't see it. The way I look at this, if you're committing a worse crime, then you're going to get an enhanced penalty. There are enhanced penalties if you commit crimes against elderly people, against handicapped people, against law enforcement officers. There are enhanced crimes against certain politicians. So there are also enhanced crimes if you're planning to do things out, like using the banks, using wires, using telephones. Those are additional elements of some fraud crimes. If you're in Florida, isn't it already a crime to commit burglary in another county or something?
It is. And 843.22 says traveling across county line in order to commit a burglary adds an additional level to the offense that your
base
offense.
But they're even trying to change that law, right?
Well, they've been talking about making it from traveling across county, right, to commit a burglary to any felony, basically.
Which is what this is. So they're saying you cross state lines, which would also be crossing county lines, since obviously it's another state. You cross state lines and come over here to commit a felony, you're going to get enhanced penalties. So that already exists.
And it's not abnormal, because if you look at the federal rules and you look at even Florida state, offense conduct matters. In other words, look at DUI. If you commit a DUI, it's X penalty. If you DUI and there's property damage, it's penalty
right.
plus.
Somebody
if,
gets hurt.
Right. So this is not odd to increase the penalties based on increasing offense conduct. And I think what they're going to say is that if you actually came from another state or another county to commit a violent protest, your mens rea, your mental intent for a crime is higher, because it's not just like it happened.
And also, wouldn't this mean that Kyle Rittenhouse would have enhanced penalties if he would have come and done what he did in Florida?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Because he left his state
which
to come to this
which
state.
Was one of the huge things that everybody was talking about. He didn't just do it in his state. He traveled to do this stuff. He was looking for this trouble. He was looking for these problems, crossing state lines. It's even worse when you go across looking for this fight, you find it, you get involved in it. You should be penalized more, in my opinion. I mean, do that where you live. Don't bring it over here. You know, I mean, that's kind of where it is. Don't come looking to shoot people in our state. You know, and I think his penalty should be enhanced for traveling across state lines. I mean, I think that's what this law is aimed at, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they actually did this announcement in Polk County, and Grady Judd is the sheriff of Polk County, and he's the guy that says, try that stuff here and see what happens.
Right, telling everybody to buy guns and shoot intruders and stuff. All right, Section 3 in the Act is titled Citizen and Taxpayer Protection Measures. Now, here is where we get a bit political, and I'm sure everybody's laughing saying a bit, because they probably think this entire thing is very political, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but this is just focusing on we're not going to defund the police, Blue Lives Matter, we stand with the cops and whatever. You know, that's what DeSantis is trying to do with this section. I think he's making it very clear which side of the aisle they fall down on. So as we go through these are a lot more politicized and not necessarily were already in place prior to this act coming down the pipe. But we'll go through these paragraphs one by one and just kind of give our thoughts on them as well. The first paragraph, which is Section A, no quote unquote defund the police permitted. This prohibits state grants or aid to any local government that slashes the budget for a law enforcement services. And my first issue with this is, how in the world are we going to define slash, right? I mean, that word does not necessarily have a specific definition that is used across other statutes or laws.
Yeah, I don't know how you define slash either, but I'll tell you what. I think this is not a part of the law that is defined to tell a specific municipality how to formulate the budget for their law enforcement. But I'll bet you, if you start seeing things like removing funding for SWAT teams and taking away bulletproof vests and telling law enforcement officers that they are not supposed to respond to specific types of calls, that's when you're going to see the state agency come down and say, we're not funding this. And that's when the municipality, which if for everybody that doesn't know, the state gets money in taxes and they filter a lot of it down to the municipalities in order for them to augment their budgets.
All right, and paragraph B, victim compensation. This waives sovereign immunity to allow a victim of a crime related to a violent or disorderly assembly to sue local government for damages where the local government is grossly negligent in protecting persons and property. So what this means is, if you're injured, somebody throws a Molotov cocktail in your store and you get injured, or shoots a gun off in the streets and you get injured, or bashes in your window and you get injured, you can sue the local government if you can prove they were grossly negligent, which means they were not taking measures to protect you. They weren't having law enforcement officers there. They weren't enforcing the law. They weren't enforcing this act to prohibit violence and disorderly conduct at these assemblies. Well, now you can sue the local government. In the past, you get shot. You can't just go sue the cops or sue the local government for, I mean, you can sue the cops if the cops are the ones shooting you, but I mean a crime being committed where some guy just shoots you or does something to you, you don't sue the government for that. You sue the guy, or you sue somebody that's negligent security that owns property. But now they're opening it up to where you can actually sue your local government if they're not proactively trying to stop this violence from happening.
Now, this is huge, and I'll tell you why. First of all, sovereign immunity is the law that protects municipalities from lawsuit. In other words, in order to sue a governmental agency, you have to have the right to sue them, meaning you have to have permission either by a statute or some legal
method. And in Florida, there's all sorts of caps on what you
can
collect.
Sure, yeah, caps on what you can collect and caps on attorney's fees. It's very difficult. So you can still sue municipalities now, but it's a lot harder. If they take away the sovereign immunity protections, that means you insert your county here can be sued just like they were any business without limitation
on what
they can collect.
This has a lot of other aspects to it that are going to come into play, because this is now our tax money. This is local government money. This isn't, when you sue the local government, it's not like you're suing Walmart and you're not touching your money. You're basically taking your own money from yourself when you sue local government. So, I mean, this is kind of a weird thing, and we'll see how this actually plays out and if anybody goes forward on this type of a case. Paragraph C, government employment benefits. This terminates state benefits and makes anyone ineligible for employment by state and local government if convicted of participating in a violent or disorderly assembly. Meaning you can't get a government job and you don't get your government benefits if you get convicted of any of these crimes.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect Medicare because that's a federal benefit, but think of it this way. Medicaid is a state benefit. Food stamps technically are either they're a federal program. It's run through the states.
And then government jobs. I mean, just
think
how many
about
people
your
have government jobs. Yeah,
think about
I mean,
your teacher's pension.
That's crazy. I mean, this is the stuff that's really crazy when, you know, you just have somebody that is peacefully protesting, and then they get mixed up in all this where something happens, and if this falls back on them, this is where it can really be unfair, and this is kind of the scary part of the act, where it's like now you're adding in these additional penalties that don't necessarily come along with certain crimes, and you're really hammering people if they're involved in these at all. And that goes along with paragraph D, which is bail. No bond or bail until first appearance in court if charged with a crime related to participating in a violent or disorderly assembly, and a rebuttable presumption against bond and bail at your first appearance. Explain what that means, Pete.
All right. Under the law, you have the right to a reasonable bond, meaning an amount of money you pay so you can be released from jail pending the determination of your whatever you're charged with. Now, in Florida, there are plenty of crimes that have a no bail situation. There are plenty of...
Most of them are the most severe.
Sure.
Or when you're a serious flight risk.
But wait, there's also a no bail situation if you violate the terms of an injunction.
Right.
Which means you'll sit in jail. There's not an actual number on the bond schedule that says if you commit this crime, it's your first offense, this is how much you can pay, you can get out of jail. You won't be able to do that. You'll have to wait till your first appearance, which is 24 hours after your arrest, to go in front of a judge.
And what does presumption of no bail mean at your first appearance?
It means that it's a rebuttable presumption, which means you're not getting a bond until you get in front of that judge. That judge now is not going to give you a bond unless you can rebut the presumption, meaning
usually the judge is trying to figure out what your bond's going to be, but at this point they're thinking no
burden.
Bond unless you prove to them why you should have one.
Correct. It is now your burden to determine, to prove to the court that you're going to be a good candidate to release on the street. That's tough, because when the rebuttable presumption is on your shoulders, you've got to produce evidence that says I'm a good person, I'm from the community, I don't have a criminal history, as opposed to I'm burning down the Chili's, I came from
right.
Colorado.
Right.
And I have no ties to this community.
Yeah, please let me out. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting, and I encourage everybody to go out there and take a look at this act on their own. I mean, we have read every single word that's in the act that was published this week. So you've heard what's in there, and you've heard our thoughts on it. I'm sure not everybody's going to agree with that, and that's fine. But I think it's important not to go too crazy and be divisive and start fights about certain things, especially when these things are already crimes. So, you know, just pick your battles, you know, as we would always say, and you don't have to be divisive, especially in a world today where there's so much divisiveness. Just having conversations is fine and disagreeing is fine. Two lawyers are going to look at this and read it and see things completely differently. Just like every single case, we see it different than the lawyer on the other side. So enjoy the interesting conversation. Hopefully it's thought provoking. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back with you next time.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.